Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Beter. Today is March 19, 1976, and this is my monthly audio letter number 10. In his farewell speech, as our nation's outgoing first president, George Washington warned us with the words, "Let there be no change by usurpation, for though this, in one instance, may be the instrument of good, it is the customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed." He would no doubt be shocked to know that today, nearly two centuries later, his words are more truthful, more urgent, and more up-to-date than all the oceans of meaningless words being poured into the ears of the American public by current presidential hopefuls. Change by usurpation has become the order of the day, as the rights of the people are usurped by our unseen rulers in order to change our way of life. And if the Rockefeller brothers succeed in their accelerating plan to destroy our republic right before our very eyes, their New World Disorder, in alliance with the Soviet Union, will engulf us soon with blinding speed. But, my friends, we must not give up, because in the decisive days we are now entering, the Rockefeller brothers will in many ways be more vulnerable than ever before, because their complex program of conquest is now behind schedule, some parts of it as much as 1 year behind, and they now have to play a deadly game of catch-up ball. They are being forced now to speed up and compress the timing of very major events in the very next few months in an attempt to get back onto schedule, and the hour is now very late for them as well as for you and me. They are behind because they have stumbled repeatedly in the past 2 years. First, they stubbed their toe by leaving a trail in the Fort Knox gold theft, which has profoundly disrupted and now ruined some of the planned final stages of David Rockefeller's World Gold Corner. Then, for that and other reasons, Nelson Rockefeller failed to seize the presidency according to plan between March and June 1975, and beyond that, he has stubbed his toes two more times, in the early fall and around Christmas 1975. John D. Rockefeller III, for his part, is being forced to close up shop at the New York office, which published the huge bicentennial decoration ads 1 year ago calling for a second American Revolution, the reason being our success in exposing its connection with the secret new Rockefeller Constitution. The work is continuing, but it is concentrated now in the American Revolution Bicentennial Administration, a federal agency here in Washington headed by John Warner, who is on John D. Rockefeller III's committee of the Second American Revolution, the name given to a book written by John D. Rockefeller published in early 1973. As for Brother Lawrence, he is occupying himself with the food stamp program and other preparations for war. The stock market, while it is extremely sick now generally, is being kept healthy-looking to the general public by means of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is made up almost totally of Rockefeller companies. Until the other elements of their game plan can be put back on the track, the dramatic crash of the Dow is being held in abeyance. The biggest of these other elements, of course, is the coming war, and it, too, is over a year late now, having been delayed first by Egyptian President Sadat and then thrown into a cocked hat last summer by Indira Gandhi's crackdown on the CIA. Because of these things, among others, the Rockefeller brothers are faced with a complex juggling act that must orchestrate our economic collapse here in America, worldwide monetary chaos, foreign intrigues, political maneuvering here at home and the igniting of the first stage of World War III in the Middle East. They planned all along to do all of these things, but not on such a tight schedule as they now face. Now they almost have to do these things all at once, or at least in very rapid sequence. If they succeed, the effect will be devastating. But if they trip again now, as they can be made to do, by awakening public awareness and reaction, they will be in serious trouble. What's more, they can't turn back. They have opened Pandora's box and unleashed forces that are slipping out of their control. Should they be further delayed long enough, their whole house of cards will begin to fall apart as they are overtaken by the Fort Knox plutonium poison scandal, the rapidly spreading exposure of their dictatorial new constitution, among other things. More than ever now, the one thing that can and will stop them short of their dictatorship goal is the power of the truth, spread far and wide. So it is crucial, now that we keep our eyes on the international scene as well as that here at home, because the two are inseparably linked together in the Rockefeller plan to enslave us all. If they pull it off, it can happen at a time you least expect it, so don't be caught off base. If the worst does happen, you have been warned, and if you have been doing whatever you can to do to warn others, whether it seems a lot or only a little to you, you will know you did your part. To point out the connection between developments here in America and those around the world, I want to discuss the following three topics today. Topic number one, world government and the destruction of family life. Topic number two, world monetary chaos and the coming crash here in America. And topic number three, World War III and the planned declaration of national emergency. Topic number one. To the uninformed, the words world government or one world order often bring to mind the utopian picture of a world at peace, relaxed, free, with an abundant life for all. This, after all, is exactly the image that Rockefeller propaganda is designed to plant in our minds. Then there are others who may vaguely realize that any world order or government on the horizon today would be rather authoritarian in nature, but who do not feel personally threatened by such a thing. People in this category reason that since, after all, they have no political ambitions anyway, all they would need to do would be to keep their nose clean, do the work they are assigned to do without kicking up a fuss, and things could not be too bad. They are the ones who sometimes say, "Better red than dead." But those who harbor such comforting notions are wrong, dead wrong. They are not acquainted with the psychology of those who seek world government or one world order. A psychology that drives for control, 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 control on the grandest scale possible, the entire world, and control all the way down to the smallest scale, your home. In my monthly audio letter number 8 for January 1976, I reveal that since at least 1954, there has been an official but super-secret White House policy, quote, to so alter life in the United States so that it can be comfortably merged with life in the Soviet Union, unquote. This is why we see an unending stream of apparent mistakes, concessions, and blunders by the modern outlaw band that masquerades as our government. These are not errors at all, but deliberate steps in the Rockefeller march toward dictatorial world domination with their Soviet allies. And this includes the Sovietization of family life, the last great bulwark against total world domination. It is not hard to see, of course, that American family life is under great pressure because the evidence is everywhere. It's common knowledge. The divorce rate is rising, the birth rate is falling, and the Census Bureau claims that the average family size is now at a record low level and still dropping. Individuals are becoming more and more isolated. But few people know that we are seeing the fruits of a deliberate war on the American family, and fewer still know that this is an integral part of the Rockefeller drive for dictatorship. This attack on family life is well organized, heavily funded, and multifaceted. But the most important, most diabolical part of it all is an intense but sugar-coated campaign now underway to gain control of your children. The objective, to break down your control over your children and place them instead under the supervision and control of the community, that is, the government. In other words, they are to be Sovietized. One aspect of this attack on your children is the subtle use of familiar, already available avenues of communication and education. Take, for example, that famous children's program, Sesame Street. Have you watched it lately? Financed primarily by Rockefeller-controlled foundations and the federal government, Sesame Street has followed the standard Rockefeller philanthropic formula that emerged over 70 years ago. It established its halo in the public eye by early programming, but has progressively turned its efforts in more sinister directions under the protection of that halo. Arguments, bad temper, hurt feelings, and even cartoons with an air of unreality are prominent today on Sesame Street, and you will look in vain for any trace of an identifiable family image. Meanwhile, the impressionable young Sesame Street audience is treated to such things as a recent episode showing all about how easy, painless, and perhaps even fun it is to use a tourniquet and syringe, all of it more explicitly than you will see on nighttime adult programming. Harried young mothers, trusting in the spotless reputation of Sesame Street, often allow their children to watch with little or no supervision, not realizing that concepts like this, which pave the way for early and easy drug addiction, are being burned into their children's minds. Sesame Street is a product of the Children's Television Workshop, whose president is Joan Ganz Cooney. She is a Rockefeller insider who a year ago signed the Bicentennial Declaration, which I mentioned earlier, launching the Rockefeller Second American Revolution to bring in their secret new constitution. Another example is seen in the big textbook controversy, which has made headlines because of the efforts of parents to prevent their introduction into public schools. Their objections, based on the degrading and immoral material they see in the books, have not succeeded in stopping these books, although the books have been slowed down. The purpose of these books is to utilize the system of compulsory education for a captive audience, supported by your taxes, but largely removed from your control nowadays, to shove down your children's throats whatever the Rockefellers decide they should learn. The goal of these books is to make your child think in terms of questioning your motives and challenging your authority against a background of crumbling values. The idea is to subtly rob your child of everything he subconsciously clings to for strength and security, until suddenly he will find himself totally lost at sea, and alone and utterly dependent upon the all-knowing, all-powerful federal government. But programs such as these, which use existing channels to brainwash your child, are only half of the story. The other half is a gigantic effort to construct an entire new apparatus nationwide, to which to take a giant leap toward formalized and ultimately complete control of your child. This is the drive for what is euphemistically called comprehensive child care. This goes far, far beyond the mere establishment of some handy daycare centers to help out working mothers, as you may have been led to believe. Currently before Congress are two essentially identical bills, Senate Bill 626 in the Senate, House Resolution 2966 in the House of Representatives, called the Child and Family Services Act of 1975 in the Senate version. It resurrects a measure which would have become law late in 1971, except that America's last elected president, Richard Nixon, vetoed it. He did so with a warning that it would commit the vast power of the federal government, quote, to the side of communal approaches to child rearing over against the family-centered approach, unquote, adding that it would be, quote, truly a long leap into the dark for the United States government and the American people, unquote. My friends, he was absolutely right. I believe in giving credit where credit is due, and Richard Nixon deserves nothing but credit for that veto, which truly served the interests of the American people in defiance of his Rockefeller bosses behind the scenes. Now the One World Order Rockefeller forces are trying once again to push the same thing through with the aid of a new name and a little facelifting. The connection between this so-called child care bill and the campaign for world government is obvious in many ways, right down to the personalities involved. For example, last month I mentioned that the Rockefeller-sponsored Declaration of Interdependence was introduced last October in Philadelphia, exhorting us all to turn our backs on America's right to continue as a free and independent nation. This was followed up in January 1976 with a ceremonial signing of this declaration by 126 United States senators and congressmen, every one of whom thereby violated his oath to preserve and defend our present United States Constitution. And if you examine the list of 27 sponsors of the Senate Child Care Bill, you will find that no fewer than 19 of them also signed the treasonous Declaration of Interdependence. These are the same forces at work. Today, we no longer have an elected president to stand in the way of the child controllers in Congress, only alert, angry citizens who so far have stymied the bill's progress through sheer intimidation of both houses of Congress. Those who are focusing specifically on this bill have accurately identified its key dangers. To begin with, the whole bill is built around the concept of a, quote, partnership, unquote, between the parent and government in rearing and training the child. But partners, my friends, are co-owners of any enterprise for which the partnership is formed. Thus, if you allow the federal government to become your partner under this bill, you will be given away a part interest in your own child. The ramifications of this partnership concept ricochet all through the child control bill and can hardly be missed. But the real joker in this deck consists of just 14 brief words buried clear back on page 56 of the Senate version and page 64 of the House version. Title 5, Section 501, Part 8, gives the following important definition for the purposes of the bill, and I quote, "Parent means any person who has primary day-to-day responsibility for any child," unquote. With this one key definition, which does not limit itself to normal usage, the writers of the Child Control Bill have thrown the door wide open for ever-expanding government control over your child through endless interpretation, reinterpretation, expansion, and elaboration under bureaucratic regulation. It is open-ended. It is an open invitation for the federal government to maneuver into position to declare itself the parent of your child, leaving you with no parental rights or powers at all. When and if that is allowed to happen, the family as we know it will have been destroyed, and the Rockefeller Soviet world empire will reign supreme for a brief moment over a broken and ruined society before it crumbles and collapses into a repetition of the Dark Ages. Right now, as I said, this bill to pave the way for dictatorial child control is temporarily stalled by citizen alertness and protest. But if you think that is the end of the matter, listen. The planned strategy of the child controllers is to lull the bill's citizens' opponents to sleep, if possible, by soft peddling it. Their plan is to put it in the closet and keep it there until the very end of the current session of Congress, if need be, and then, when the citizen protesters have evaporated, in the belief that they have won, the child control bill will suddenly be whisked out of the closet and passed before we know what hit us. If this happens, the Rockefeller brothers will be very close to final success in achieving the objective spelled out over 70 years ago for the Rockefeller program to take over education under the guise of philanthropy. When John D. Rockefeller Sr. set up the powerful General Education Board in 1904, its purpose was spelled out clearly in its very first publication called Occasional Letter No. 1. It says, and I quote, "In our dreams we have limitless resources, and the people yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hands. The present educational conventions fade from our minds, and unhampered by tradition, we work our own goodwill upon a grateful and responsive rural folk," unquote. And the punchline, my friends, a few sentences later is, "So we will organize our children into a community and teach them to do in a perfect way the things their fathers and mothers are doing in an imperfect way, in the homes, in the shop, and on the farm," unquote. Topic number 2. I have often commented that to get a glimpse of where the United States economy is heading, one need only look at Great Britain. She is careening along down the road to disaster, and we are not far behind. Early this month, the British pound sterling crashed downward through the $2 level of parity for the first time in history, and it is still unstable. Meanwhile, the United States dollar also is in trouble in international currency markets, which are becoming more jittery and unstable by the day. A full-blown international currency crisis is now erupting, exactly as planned by the Rockefeller brothers when they forced Europe to agree to a floating dollar with no fixed value on March 16, 1973. At a stroke, the Bretton Woods system of fixed exchange rates established in 1944, was wiped out, And now we are back to the monetary anarchy and nationalism of the 1930s, pushed there by the Rockefellers. This invites trade wars, speculation, and rapid devaluations, and all of these dangerous developments are beginning to materialize. The shocking 20% devaluation of the Italian lira a few days ago is only a harbinger of things to come, and the key target in all of this is still our own United States dollar. Soon, the crescendo of events in southern Africa will throw more gasoline onto the fires of the world monetary instability as the big prize, the Union of South Africa, faces a life and death struggle after Rhodesia is disposed of by the Rockefeller Soviet Cuban mercenaries fighting in that area. Even now, though you are hearing nothing about this through the kept Rockefeller news media, panicky citizens of Rhodesia and South Africa are trying to find some way to pull up their financial stakes and leave, but they are trapped because of currency controls in those countries. Soon, according to Rockefeller plans, which I revealed as long ago as February 1974, the gold mines of South Africa are to be hit by strife, sabotage, civil war, warfare, and as the gold supply from that source is substantially curtailed, gold prices will be forced upward while our floating dollar sinks. The Rockefeller brothers are bent on controlling the vast mineral riches of South Africa, including especially the very large uranium deposits there, and the secret uranium enrichment process South Africa has developed that is the most economical in the world. World Wars I and II were fought over oil. World War III again involves oil, but the emphasis this time is shifting to uranium, since the Rockefellers are determined to make nuclear power the energy wave of the future under their monopolistic control. The international monetary crisis will have its consequences here at home in rekindled inflation, credit crunch, and all the other economic ills that it spawns. The manipulated Dow Jones Industrial Average hit 1,000 a few days ago on March 11, 1976, at a time when true unemployment, according to my own sources within the Department of Labor, has now reached 19.1% nationwide. Meanwhile, the specter of threatened defaults, Lockheed in May, New York in June, and others, is again coming into view.